Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is For the Love of Learning, and this is Simone Padur, and I'm with my co-host, Christine DiDomenico. Hello, Christine.
Hello, Simone. Glad to be here today.
I'm so glad you're here, because Marilyn, our guest, isn't here yet, so I'm not sure if she's forgotten, so I'm glad I have Christine to talk to, otherwise I'd be talking to myself or anybody that called in. While we're waiting for Marilyn, Christine suggested that we talk about one of my favorite subjects at the moment, which is my new horse. So what would you like to know, Christine, or where do you want to start? Or
well, I saw you making comments on Facebook about how much awareness your horse gives you.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
If we could talk about that and how we can use our awareness, notice our awareness, you know, especially like with animals and with the earth and things like that. So can you talk about what that means to gain awareness from your horse?
Sure. And it can be from any animal. For me, I've bought a young horse, and he's super sensitive and aware to his surroundings. I mean, he can walk down the same path, but if it has rained, he lets you know that it's different by looking at around, and his ears have perked up, and he's like, oh, it's different today. And we have Marilyn. So.
Yay. Well, and I think this ties in to what we're going to talk about today, too, about talking about awareness. So, hi, Marilyn.
Absolutely.
Hi.
Hey, Marilyn.
I'm sorry to be a few minutes late. I can't tell you what happened, but never mind. Doesn't matter. I'm here. I'm so glad to be here.
So, we were just talking about awareness, Marilyn, so I'm just going to give you a little bit of an introduction for our audience. So Marilyn's topic today is, are you looking for love in all the wrong places? How I created joy as a misfit. So we're talking about, you know, are you looking for a soulmate or a right one? Or are you, you know, who's going to fill the void in your life? And what love are you looking for? So Marilyn Bradford, who I've known for quite a few years now, she's a certified access consciousness facilitator. That's very difficult to say fast. An international speaker, a psychotherapist and teacher, and has worked in the field of addiction for over 20 years. And she's author of a brilliant book that I absolutely love called Right Recovery for You, a radical and unique approach to ending any addictive or compulsive behavior. We were just talking about awareness and how sometimes the animals in our lives are really good at giving us awareness of things. So can you talk a little bit about yourself, Marilyn, from, you know, what I've said about you or whatever you want to say, really, and about awareness and about how that affects people?
Yes, thank you so much. I'm very, very glad to be here. My alarm didn't go off, so I'm doing other things. But anyway, yeah, what I really wanted to look at today was looking at love, and that means essentially love of self, love of life in all the wrong places. Although I don't think animals are the wrong place, because I think animals really show us caring we can have for ourselves. But a lot of the other things that I did early on were definitely the wrong places. And so one of the things I wanted to start with today, I actually made some notes, was on being a misfit, because I was definitely a misfit. And I imagine that a lot of people listening to this show were also, in a way, some kind of a misfit. Now, I'm not talking about being a rebellious teenager. I was lying awake in the middle of the night looking at what's the difference between being a misfit and being a rebellious teenager. And being a rebellious teenager is more like, okay, my parents want me to wear white. I'm going to wear black. You know, and Whereas being a misfit is much more like, everybody wants to wear white. I'm like, oh, I don't know if that works for me. I think I'm going to wear different colors. Huh, maybe I'll wear orange. Oh, that's nice. I like orange. So what I'm really, and how does this have anything to do with love? Because it has to do with loving ourselves and caring about ourselves and being the kind of person who's like, wow, you know, what really works for me? Because if you don't have a lot of caring and love for yourself, you really can't be you, and you really can't be out there in the world. So that's my little intro. Speaking from someone who very early on in their lives tried to fit in, which is the opposite of self-love, tried to fit in by wearing white if people wanted me to wear white and doing whatever it is that they wanted me to do. So anyway, that's my little intro, Simone.
No, I like it.
Yeah.
Cool. Go ahead, Christine.
And we're so entrained to fit in and that there's something wrong with being a misfit. I mean, I remember, I might have told the story before on one of our shows, but I remember when I was teaching and the kids putting on a concert, there was a choral group, and one of the teachers made a comment about one of the kids, one of the eighth grade girls that was just belting it out, and she was so willing to be herself where all the other eighth graders were like hiding, not wanting to sing too loud, worried about what their friends were thinking. And the teacher commented sad that Kate was so different. So that really like an amazing awareness to me of how important we have made it to fit in.
Yeah.
Just kind of crazy.
Yeah, I know it's absolutely true. And, you know, what? One of the things that I tell my clients, because I've been a psychotherapist forever, like, you know, sort of before Noah, but one of the things I tell my clients is, what if you loved being different? What if being different was really, really a wonderful thing? Because if you think about all of the people in the world who've ever made an actual difference in the world, whether it's like Golda Meir or Picasso or whomever, it's because they were willing to be different. They were willing to be who they were and be their absolute contribution rather than be the milquetoast of the universe.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm not sure about milquetoast. That's an old-fashioned kind of thing. But what does it have to do with looking for love in all the wrong places? Okay, so essentially what I did as a child in terms of looking for love in all the wrong places was that I looked for, now this is going to sound crazy, but I looked for love from my family. How many of you all, as children, looked for love from your family, and how could that be in all the wrong places? Well, if you have a family that doesn't know how to love, didn't really desire you, whose definition? Oh, that's a great one. Let's go into that. So, what's your definition of love? Let's just start with Simone and Christine. What's your definition of love? How would you talk about that?
I think for me, it would be being seen for me.
Wow. Yes.
And I don't think that's what we see. I mean, the way I see people supposedly showing love is by controlling others.
Right. Exactly.
Or being in control of others.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I love what both of you said because, I mean, Simone, seriously, did. I don't really mean to put you on the spot or your family, but when you were growing up, all right, let's just ask the world. When you were growing up, did anyone really see you as you?
Nope.
Certainly not me.
Not me either.
No, and I don't think, I mean, I think, you know, maybe one person in Cornwall, England, and one in, you know, Mumbai, India. Maybe there was two other in the world where there were who actually had parents who saw them as them. And that's not to put parents down. It's much more about what people normally think of as love, which is essentially controlling. And that certainly was true for my family. And I want to make something clear here. I'm not about making people wrong. It's about looking at what is, and also about just, you know, we grow up in places where we do what our parents did. We do the whole cultural thing, because certainly my parents didn't look at me for who I was. They looked at me for how I could fit into their reality.
Yeah.
So you may all know this story, but it's the whole thing about why the man asked his wife, his new wife, why she cut off the end of the ham when making the Christmas ham or turkey or whatever it is you eat. You could cut off the end of the, vegan loaf while making the holiday.
It's not quite the same ring.
It's not quite the same, but, you know, it's sort of there. But anyway, and the woman said, well, because my mother did. And then they asked her mother, the grandma who was coming, why did you cut off the end of the ham or vegan loaf or whatever? And she said, because my mother did. Fortunately, the great-grandmother was there, and they asked her, and she said, well, because I only had a small pan, and that's the only thing that would fit. And, you know...
Oh, goodness.
How many of us do that? We do what we do because that's how our mothers did it, our fathers did it, or culture does it, or whatever it was. And what does that have to do with love? What does that have to do with being acknowledged and being cared about? I mean, you may think, well, that's a ham on a turkey. You're right. Well, I can't have a ham on a turkey. That's the end of the ham on a Christmas. But actually, it's really about responding or being or doing without total awareness.
Right.
And if you're doing anything like that without total awareness, you certainly can't be doing love.
No.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, maybe a moment. I just feel like I'm talking on and on and on and on and on, and I'm not giving you all any chance to talk.
Well,
and it may be because I scrambled to be here because my crazy alarm went off late. But anyway.
I was just thinking today, like, that's one of the gorgeous gifts about often animals in your life, is because you have to be totally present. Like I was saying to Christine, I have this young horse and I cannot check out. Like,
no,
it's not allowed.
No.
And I was with somebody today who was completely checked out. And what a difference it made to me having to then be aware not only of the horse, but also of the person to make sure she didn't get kicked or run over or, you know, and my horse isn't unkind or, you know, freaky at all, but he was aware that I was aware. There was
right.
having to be this level of, you know, thingy in my world of this person. So, yeah.
So what was it like for the person to be checked out with a horse? What did that create? If you hadn't been there, what would have that created?
Oh, she would have been hurt.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how many of us have gotten hurt in our lives because we were checked out?
Yeah. Ooh, gives me goosebumps.
Ooh, and certainly me. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Yeah.
So I love what you said, and it's about we're looking for love in all the wrong places. A lot of it's about when we're checked out, when we're not present, we can't even receive love, whatever that means to us. I mean, I work an enormous amount with mental health and addiction issues. And in a lot of ways, we'll just stick with addiction because most people can really get that easily. In a lot of ways, and I don't mean that in any way other than it's more logical with addiction.
Yeah.
But a lot of what addiction is about being checked out.
Right.
It's about vacating ourselves, not just from this reality, not just from what we think is insane, but actually vacating ourselves from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And once you vacate yourself from yourself, you're going to get hurt in one way or another, whether it's because you're hurting yourself or because you're not there so others can hurt you. Because if you're not present, you can't even receive love. So I appreciate that, Simone. Yeah, that's really a big one about not being present. You could look for love and then you're not present and then, if somebody shows up,
Well, I'm just wondering, and you must have run across this in your practice, is like how many women or men, it doesn't really matter, like are able to then go into relationships that are, you know, aggressive or dangerous or whatever because they aren't being present.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right and perfect and true. I even have a friend, an acquaintance, I would say more like that, who does it all the time. She's like, I don't get that, you know, I really didn't understand that. How, you know, he turned out to be kind of a jerk and all of that. If you're not present, you can't be aware of who a person is. You're just kind of in the stream of everything, like kind of seems okay, but actually it's not. Yeah. So, And I do want to go back to this whole childhood thing that I brought up at some point, because that's so key for so many of us. And a lot of the reason many of us check out and a lot of the reasons underscoring addiction is this whole business of what I call, or what Gary of Access Consciousness calls, invalidation of being. So, yeah, and it's been just huge for me and huge for my client. So, you know, you come into the world, you're so happy, you're just there, and everything is wonderful, and all of a sudden you get the message, and it doesn't have to be verbal. It can be energetic of, wait a minute, as Italians, Catholics, Islamics, Mormons, Americans, Australians, Nigerians, whatever it is, this is how we do things.
Right.
This is how you speak to your mother. This is how you speak to your father. This is what you do in the world. No, you can't run around wearing red clothes and screaming and laughing. No, you can't be interested in science if you're a girl. And I don't mean to make this about men and women, but that's something that often comes up. So let's do a different one. You can't be kind and gentle and caring if you're a boy. Whatever it is, we get these messages that we have to behave in certain ways. We have to be certain things. We have to have certain loyalties. But no matter what, we can't be who we are. And that's the invalidation of being. Now, why does that make a difference? Because that's an enormous ingredient in looking in love for all the wrong places. Because when we get that message as children, what we tend to do then is not go, that's crazy, you people are stupid. We go, no, which is what we really should do. We go to, oh, I must be wrong. I must be bad. I can't be interested in science. Maybe I'd like to wash the dishes, you know. Or I can't be kind. I gotta beat people up who are more weak than I am. That's the way I'll fit in. That's the way. Yeah. So anyway, Let me put that out there. I'd love to have you all comment on that.
Yeah. Huh. Well, and it just makes me realize that if that's your modus operandum from the time you're little, then, you know, what chance do you have really of you know, finding something that, you know, would work for you, whatever that would be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Not a big chance, because there's no one out there going, hey, you know, these people are nuts. You're actually awesome, wonderful, just as you are. And when you were talking about animals, it reminded me of how animals never do that with us.
No.
They're like, oh, wow, you're so cool who you are. That's awesome. You know,
yeah.
They're not like, gosh, you need to be a horse parent or friend or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for people that, like, I was talking to a friend the other day, and she's often picks men that are, well, let's just say they're interesting. And not in the, ooh, you know, you're so well read. It's more like, wow, you are a whole bunch of crazy. So what are some of the tools that you recommend to clients or you know, people in your classes of how to start becoming more present and aware of who's in front of you?
Well, I think becoming present is just that, to ask, okay, I would like to be more present. What would that look like? What would that take?
Yeah.
And if I were present, what would I be aware of right now?
Great question.
It sounds so easy, but it's a shock to many people. It really is.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to know that their mother's mean or that their husband's or wife is not really interested in them or anything.
Yeah.
Being present can come at a great price, which is uncomfortableness. On the other hand, it's the only thing that actually leads to ease and happiness. It really is. Because there's an incredible joy in being present, because you know what is.
Yeah.
Now, I was mentioning earlier a friend, and she just went off. She's newly divorced, and she just went off on this sort of gallivanting trip with this man, and she sent me this text that's like, how come I didn't see who he was? And, you know, he's not treating me well. And this isn't, you know, mega abuse. It's just like, I said, well, did you actually ask a question? And that's another key to it all, is asking a question. Who is this person? Are we actually compatible? What would this be like? We go to, oh, he looks really cute, and he told me this was going to be a fun trip. And so part of the antidote to not being present is to actually ask questions. Because and one of the things I texted her was, most people lie. They lie to themselves, because people, generally speaking, don't have self-awareness. And they, because they're lying to themselves, because of a lack of self-awareness, I'm a wonderful, kind, great person who also, in their alternative light, beats dogs. But but we don't look at that.
That's not funny, but.
I know. I mean, that's the idea. You know, so it's, I said, don't take people for what they look like, and don't take what people say to be true. And that sounds like a really negative point of view, but it's not, because it's not about, oh, they're saying this, they're wrong. It's about, okay, so what else actually is true here? So much of being present and so much of finding love and self-love and whatever you want to look at it is a willingness to see things the way they are. It's a willingness to be there, to be present with what is, rather than what we wish that the person was. And once again, this starts so much in childhood, when we're made wrong for not being quiet or not being whatever it is. So we decide, okay, so what is it that they want from me? What can I mean, I remember actually even being in high school, walking up the stairs in my high school, where everybody had a political point of view, going, I wish someone would just tell me what I'm supposed to think, because I have no point of view about any of it.
Yeah.
You know, but that's that whole thing of looking outside of ourselves for acknowledgement of being, which we equate with love, which we don't get in general. Instead of going, hey, you know, I'm really cool. I don't have to fit in. It doesn't matter. I'm a great misfit. Who cares? I'm having fun.
Yeah.
But it's very, very difficult for kids to do that. So, I mean, you all are teachers. What do you know about what happens for kids in those kinds of things when they are misfits?
Well, one of my favorite stories that Christine tells, I don't know if she's still with us or not, is about the football players, Christine? The kids you were talking to that, you know, do you actually want to do this? I don't know if she's still on. Let me just check. Christine, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I watched you and then I came back on. So, I actually spoke to a group of football players and I asked them a question. They were high school kids. And I said, how much of what you are doing and choosing in your life is because you want to, and how much of it is because you think you have to, or somebody else told you
cool.
you have to. And there was this collective sigh in the room. That was the energy of, oh, my God, like my whole life I'm doing because I think I'm supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such an amazing awareness for me to see how there's so many things that are projected at kids from their parents, but not even their parents. Often I have seen that it's coming from the kids because they think they have certain expectations to meet. You know, I worked in a very upper middle class school district, and there were certain expectations. The expectation was that you do go to college. There was really no discussion of then you go to college. And there's so many other choices available, but that was the choice that kids had. Or if you didn't, then you were stupid or there was something wrong with you. Which is such a narrow way to look at things, and it narrows down the possibilities that can show up for somebody.
Yeah.
It was quite an eye-opener.
Well, and that, you know, there was a story I wanted to talk about today that was really an eye-opener for me that was very similar, which is I have a friend, and she has a son who at that time I think was 17. He was maybe even 16. He was still in high school. And he was kind of the ringleader for a whole group of other students who were doing drugs, mostly pot, not like mega hard drugs, but still they were doing it fairly regularly. And he knew that I didn't have a point of view about it. It's like, well, you know, it's just a choice. But anyway, so I asked his mom, could I talk with the two of you, both of you, about this whole thing about drugs and why high school students are doing drugs? He's like, yeah, absolutely. So we had this meeting that absolutely blew my mind away. We'll just call him John. So I was like, okay, so John, so what's the deal? And, oh, I want to say one other thing about this, and something like you were talking about, Christine. This was in Houston, from a wealthy family. So we're not talking about people who don't have opportunities. Let's say that rather than possibilities. We're talking about a kid who went to a high-end, it was still public, but high school. And he started talking, and he said, look, Marilyn, you know, we're told we're not supposed to do drugs. And then we go home, and there are parents on the lawn having their second martini, smoking the cigarette, and doing nothing with their lives, basically. I was like, whoa, wow, ooh, ah. I said, okay, more, please. And he started talking about how every time we have a creative idea, we go into school, we're like, what about this? And like, no, this is how it is. This is what you need to do. You have to go to college, you know, just like you were saying, Christine. And you have to, I do have some business connections that I can hook you up with. Or I do have, let me see, I know someone in the senior year who has a brother who would probably be a good mate for you. So, you know, he has a lot of money. And John was just like, we don't want that. We don't Wow. want a life where there are no possibilities. We want to create more, but every time we turn around, we're like in this boxed-in stall. There's nothing that we're told or encouraged to be or do. And it was such an eye-opener for me. I was like, wow.
That's amazing.
And, yeah, it really, really, really was. And the good and the bad was he went on, he's now like 22, I think, to create a lot more, mainly because he had a mother who acknowledged who he was. He had a mother who said, hey, John, what do you want? What's up for you? What would you like? And he learned from a very early age to care about himself. And actually his position with his group of kids was much more taking care of people so people didn't OD. Hopefully they didn't get into harder drugs. You know, I mean, he was like the mentor of it all when he was 17, 18. Wow. And some of the kids did go on to basically destroy themselves and take, you know, to take more drugs. I mean, hard drugs. And I'm not making this about drugs. This is about living in cultures all over the world where people don't actually acknowledge who kids are and don't support them in that because they were never supported. So we're looking to them. We're looking to people who don't acknowledge us for the love we didn't get.
Yeah.
Whew. You know, I know.
And I wonder, I wonder how many parents are not creating their own life and are trying to create their kids' lives, and that which doesn't allow the kids to create their life. And then it's like, oh, almost like a, I'm giving up. And so they shut down their awareness. They take drugs to shut that down. And if the parents actually chose for them and to chose to create their life, I wonder what would be different for the kids.
Yeah.
And part of the deal is there's no support for it. I mean, I went through years and years and years and years before I began to see, and for me, and it can be different for every person, but it started with going to therapy, and it in a way ended, which is to say I got what I required from Access Consciousness, about being myself and loving who that was and asking questions about that. But before that, it was like, I don't understand. I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm not happy.
Yeah,
I married a person, and he wasn't in any way a mean person, but he did expect this from me and that from me, and I did it, and the whole time I felt alienated from myself. And if you're if anybody on this call or you know anyone who has a sense of being alienated from themselves, I can pretty much guarantee that they are, quote, looking for love in all the wrong places. And not being the actual joyful, wonderful mystic that they are, which is all by way of saying they don't work in the way that many other people in their lives do. And that can show up in so many different ways. It can show up in not being not wanting to have children, not being attached to family. That's a huge one. Because what I found in so many of my clients was one of the difficulties, besides never having been acknowledged for who they were, was that they were supposed to have this unquestioned loyalty to family.
Oh, boy, Marilyn.
I know. It's kind of hot, but I worked with this, and it was actually a family that was very traditionally Italian. Now, I'm not picking on Italy. I love Italy. It could have been anything. It could have been traditionally American Southern. It could have been English, a particular class, you know, like upper class, or it could have been from India, you know, untouchables or Brahmins or whatever. It's anywhere you have a people who identify themselves with their culture, ethnicity, class. But anyway, so I saw in the end, I saw the husband, I think, once, but I saw the wife and the daughter, who was 15 at the time, multiple times. And both were depressed. Both at times had contemplated suicide. And when I looked at it, it was all about how much pressure they were under to fit in and to care about this family, where both sets of, what do you want to call it, so let's just say grandparents to the child, because that's easier to identify. Both sets of grandparents to the child were unbelievably abusive, physically abusive, sexually abusive, emotionally abusive, and yet because of this sort of dictum that you have to be loyal to the family, nobody could talk about it, nobody could acknowledge it, nobody could do anything about it. And at one point, after I'd been working with the wife for a while, she was this incredibly brilliant woman. She had a lot of talent, literary talent. She was going to be an editor and, you know, looking at jobs and all of this and that, having been a housewife. And I'm not putting that down, but that didn't work for her. Her husband was like, of course I support you. You can do anything you want. And then he would sabotage everything she did to get this job, to be anything beyond an Italian housewife. And the daughter, she said, the daughter was a little what we would call overweight, had dark hair, was very bouncy and vibrant, very creative, did all these, at that time, wild, crazy things. She didn't get a tattoo, but she got a henna and did this and that. And she said, you know what? After a while, she said, my dad wants a bland, white, blonde, straight-haired cheerleader. Exactly the opposite of what she was. And fortunately, I've lost touch with her, but the last time that I did talk with her, she was a sophomore at an Ivy League college, doing great, being crazy, being the incredible, brilliant person she was, which was really cool. But I'm just bringing this up as an example of how so much of what we call mental health difficulties, depression, even suicidal ideation, has to do with this, with people trying to invalidate who we are, to impose this incredible pressure on us to be something we're not, and not having anyone who goes, hello, wait a minute, forget about them. It doesn't matter. There's a bigger universe. Who do you want to be? What brings joy to your life? You know, and that's been such a huge part of my practice. It's not, depression is a problem with the brain. You need an antidepressant. It's like, depression is the problem you grew up with. It's the people in your life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing that now with a friend of mine who got married very young and thought that she wanted this life of, you know, for her.
I think we lost you, Christine.
And
is that a bad connection in New York?
All right,
or what's
let me go
here?
To another spot. Where I am today, yes. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So what I was saying was I have a friend who this is exactly is what's happening, where she made a choice to get married young, have kids, wanted a husband to take care of her, just kind of pretty much shut herself off to who she was And, and these are choices that she made, and now is becoming aware that, wait a minute, you know, maybe I want something different. Maybe I do want to create my life in a different way. And I think it's cool that she's coming to this awareness and opening her eyes to this. So many people don't. And like you said, it shows up as this unhappiness or this depression, when what if it's just about creating something different in your life? That's actually the true you, not the false you.
Yeah.
And what if it's about knowing that's okay and knowing that you may not even have a solid you. You may not even know what you desire. But you do. You are aware that something else is possible.
Yeah.
I mean, I, and this was not that long ago. I've been using these tools a long time, but I would go into relationships asking questions and also having decisions about the person. That they fit this of what I was looking for, and they fit this, and then turning off all the other awareness to all the things that I didn't desire, and not even seeing those things until, you know, a year later, and I had the aha moment that, oh my gosh, boy, did I shut off my awareness. But it's pretty cool when you have that aha moment and the curtain parts, and you see clearly. You can choose something totally different.
Well, and I find too, when you're willing to be totally present, you also see the gifts of people that you totally ignored because they didn't fit your idea of where it should come from or what it should look like. Like with friendships or family, like my brother, I mean, I didn't quite get fully till very shortly how much he cared about me and how much he was willing to be there for me.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you say more about that whole idea, Simone, about that, because it doesn't then fit our reality, we don't receive the gift, the love, the acknowledgement, whatever, from other people? Because I think that's awesome.
Yeah, well, I guess probably the easiest way to explain it is, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, I have a type of person or a type of guy or girl, whatever, that I date. You know, this is my type.
Mm-hmm.
So they go out there looking for, this is what they should look like. They should have this color eyes. They should be this tall. They should have this job and all of these things. And when I was looking for a relationship, I was like, I don't care if it's a man or a woman, you know, somebody that is kind, somebody that has my back, somebody that I can laugh with, somebody that's easy to live with, someone who, you know, money is ease for us, whatever that looks like. And he wasn't at all what I thought he would look like, or as far as his age or any of that. Had it been me 10 years ago, I would have gone, no, I couldn't possibly date him. He's too young, or he's too this, or he's too that, or whatever. So.
That is so cool. Yeah. It's like we put something out there, and we put it out there based on this whole idea that most of us get growing up, that a person who does blank looks like blank.
Yes.
You know, I mean, going back to a person who's Italian or Norwegian or Southern American or Californian or New Yorkish does this and looks like this, and then we learn that we have to create this template for whatever person we're looking for, and then we're not open to anything else. And that's what, again, what creates looking for love in all the wrong places. I actually made a bunch of notes. so let me just read this list quickly, since I think 15 minutes left. Looking for love in all the wrong places. In people, places, and things. In making anyone or anything other than yourself your source. In addiction. In judging yourself. In deciding you are not enough. In making things significant, in trauma, drama, and anything else that's ever, quote, happened to you, in making yourself a victim, in trying to fit in buying anyone else's point of view, and not celebrating the different you are.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my short list of how and where we look for love in all the wrong places. And the difficulty with that is you're never going to find it there.
No. Ugh, it gives me the chills. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I just recently got a part-time job teaching, and it is totally not what I expected it to be. I get to, you know, go into, and it's so much easier than I ever would have thought. I get to go into schools, all the lessons are planned for me. I get to add as much of a flavor, kind of like cooking, like you've got a pre-made thing, but then you can add as much flavoring as you desire.
Cool.
I don't have to do much marking. Like, it's literally, it's sort of a summary of the classroom. And I just get to go and play with the kids. It's awesome.
Cool. How fun is that?
Yeah. But if I had been rigid about it and been like, well, this is what's possible, and I would have never even seen it.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. I think most of us, it's sort of what you were saying about how you might have 10 years ago and how I'm sure I would have 10 years ago. And whatever it was, looked for the right person, the right job, the right this, the right that. And the right has nothing to do with actually what works for us, or what's going to be amazing or fun or a contribution. It has to do with what we've been taught we should be looking for, or that,
yep,
that is. Or, you know, I've been, you know, my first marriage, which ended in divorce, was all about that, because it was all about, okay, I'm 30 now, I need to be married, the man needs to have a decent job, he needs to look this way. And he was actually a nice person. I was lucky. Because, whatever you want to call it, because a lot of people who are going from templates, let's just call it templates for jobs or people, end up with someone who's really mean or nasty or whatever. Mm. I didn't, but it was so boring. Oh, my God. Because I never was I was like, I could have died on a slab of marble going, can we have a decent conversation, please? Because he met all of these criteria, but he didn't work for me. And that's the question I ask people. What works for you? What is actually going to generate and create, not be the source of your happiness, but be an addition to your life, no matter what it is, a place you live, a job, a person, a friend, a partner, what's going to enhance your life, not be your life, but enhance your life, rather than fit into some kind of template you've decided you have to have. And and that, I think, is just so, so, so crucial.
Yeah.
I love
sure.
that. I really do love that. And I... The young people that I see around me are more in looking at it more that way than their parents. It's like they are not rushing into getting married, even if they're in a relationship. It's like they're just like enjoying each other, enjoying their life. But then I hear the parents talking about, you know, I wonder if they'll get married or get engaged, or like that is the goal. And that doesn't have to be the goal at all.
Exactly. No, I noticed that too. I grew up in a time, I'm old enough that I grew up in a time where there was a lot of racial prejudice in America and a lot of fixed point of views about men and women and gay and this and that. And I noticed my friends' daughters, because I didn't have any friends who had sons, but I noticed that their daughters, none of that was relevant to them. They didn't think twice about having a friend who was a person of color, or, you know, questioning themselves, do I like men or do I like women or anything like that. So despite the whole political situation in America currently, which is the antithesis of what we're talking about, I do think there are a number of younger people out there who really just are like, you know what? I'm about me, and not in a self-centered, it's all about me, not in a narcissistic way, but I know who I am, and I'm discovering more and more every day, and I'm looking at people for who they are.
Yeah.
Not whether or not they fit a particular mold.
Yeah.
So that's really, I don't know, is that true in England, Simone? Is that where?
I would say in some respects. I mean, we just went to a wedding lately where somebody said to, oh, well, you know, it's time, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, my God, you're
right.
10 years younger than me. Like, what do you mean it's time? My time has passed if you're talking about the time. So it is a little bit more structured, I would say, particularly for the middle class. There is still a class flavor here, even if people say that it's not. It's still present to a certain degree.
Uh-huh.
So that dictates things. And also people are very concerned about what other people think of them, more so than I would say than Canada, for instance, which is where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a stigma about what job you choose and, you know, who you are and how you behave in public. You know, don't be too extravagant with your joy. It might be bad. So...
Wow.
Unless, of course, you're drunk,
yeah.
And then it's okay.
Too many pints. Yeah, and you said something that really struck a chord, which is if you are concerned what other people think about you, you're done.
Yeah.
You don't have, I mean, and that's a little, you know, that sounds like very strong talk, but actually it's true. At least it should be a jumping off point for you. Ask yourself, I mean, anybody who's listening to this now or in the future, do you care
mm-hmm.
what other people think? If the answer is yes, then anytime, any place you care what other people think, you cannot be you.
Yeah.
Now, once again, I mentioned in the beginning of the call about like the teenage resistance and reaction. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, you know, everybody thinks I should wear red, so I'm going to wear black, or I'm going to do this, or have 8,000 tattoos, or whatever. Whatever you choose to do, if you're doing it because that really works for you, that's very different than doing it because of what everybody else thinks. So
yeah.
I would encourage anyone who's listening to this who has a sense of, well, I do care what other people think, just keep asking yourself, if I didn't care for what other people thought about what I looked like or what I did, what would I be aware of? What works for me? Because that's the only place, ultimately, that we're going to find what we're calling love in all the wrong places. We're going to find love in, quote, the right place, whatever that means to you. That's that sense of, I'm not going to be the effect of what my culture, neighborhood, country, religion, political situation thinks I should be. I'm going to be me, not
yeah.
out of defiance, but out of just, because that's who I am, because I'm awesome the way I am, because I'm a contribution the way I am. You know,
yeah.
I've talked on, I do a lot about no judgment, and one of the things I talked about is, you know, suppose you're a bluebird or a redbird. I don't think they have redbird. I don't know. Anyway, we have cardinals. You know, you're on a branch and you're going, oh, my gosh, I don't have the right feathers. I don't have the right number. My feathers are the wrong shade of red. You know, and you can just go round and round until you fall off the branch. Instead of going, wow, I'm awesome the way I am with my red and blue feathers and my off-key voice and all of that, you know. Back to animals, they never concern themselves with looking right or acting right. They're just who they are. So, yeah, anyway. I know
we're
getting towards the end, but yeah.
Yeah, just quickly, there's this autistic boy that lives with his mom and dad that run the stable that I have my horse at. And he is just so matter of fact about people. You know, and other people
cool.
are pigeon,
yeah.
you know, sort of tiptoeing around, and he just says it how it is. Like the other day, you know, I got this new horse, and he says, "Oh, he's new, and hey," and I said, "Yeah, he's still got the tags on him," and he says, "Oh, that's good, because then you can return him if he doesn't fit."
That's awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we look at kids saying things like that as being inappropriate, but they're not.
Well, there's such a freedom there that is so often not acknowledged.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's cool. a real freedom in it. And there's a real acknowledgement of self. Yeah.
Yes.
So we have about 5 minutes left, Marilyn. We would like to give you some time to talk about what you have coming up and how people can get in touch with you also if they have questions or would like to do a session or something or with you.
Oh, how kind. I don't know what I have coming up. That's odd. you can get in touch with me by emailing me at MarilynBradford@me.com. That's MarilynBradford at me.com, which I kind of love. It's actually an Apple ID, but it's like, yeah, it's about me, not in a self-centered way, but it's like, yeah, what would I like to create with my life? So anyway, that's how you can get in touch with me. I did write a book called Right Recovery for You, which you can find at the Access Consciousness shop or on Amazon.com, both in paperback and Kindle, and it's now published in German and Italian. So how does it get
Woo-hoo!
Better than that? Woohoo! I do a lot of private sessions all over the world via Skype mostly, just about facilitating people in empowering themselves and letting go of all the ideas that they've got that really have nothing to do with them. It's like, yeah, what would it take to launch you being you? You know, so basically that's where I am and that's what I do. And I'm very, very grateful. I didn't get a chance to say this in the beginning because I came on a few minutes late, but I'm very grateful to both of you for having me on your show. This is totally an amazing opportunity. I had a very early morning meeting and I went back to sleep and apparently I didn't hear my alarm. thank you both. I really
Pleasure.
Appreciate it. This is a great show. So thank you.
Awesome. So glad to have you.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say something about the book too. It's an amazing book, and it's not just about what we would think as recovery of addiction or something. It's about just this topic that we're talking about, being more of you. So
yeah,
yeah.
Highly recommend
it,
reading
yeah.
that book.
And it's Thanks. Got lots of tools in it too. Like that's what I love about it. So if you're looking for tools and ways to apply, you know, some of the things we've talked about, it's awesome.
Thank you all. And yeah, it's right recovery for you. That's really what it is about. It's like recovering this being that's being sort of dumped upon or covered up with all kinds of layers of culture and
you're recovering yourself.
Yes, exactly.
Cool.
Who you actually be? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
all right. So we're just about out of time. So go ahead.
Yeah, we are. So next week it is going to be surprise. I actually think next week. Am I talking about my horse next week, Christine? Is that what I'm doing?
Yes, I think so. I think that's a great topic for us.
So that's what we'll be doing. It doesn't matter if you're horsey or not, or if you have animals or not. The more and more I work with horses, the more I realize they're like kids. So if you're a parent or somebody that works with kids or people in general, it may be the show for you. So thank you.
Cool. Okay.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Okay, thank you both.
This is great.
Show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.